A royal blue background fills the screen with white words at its center. Sony Pictures Classics. A word appears over a white background. Ingenious. Ingenious Media presents an MJZ production. A Wonderful Films production. A Rumble Films production. In association with Hanway Films. In collaboration with Indiana Production SPA. In association with Carte Blanche Cinema. In an apartment, our view travels slowly down a dimly lit hallway toward the open doorway of a bedroom. Clay's Bang, Elizabeth Debicki, Mick Jagger, Donald Sutherland. A title appears, The Burnt Orange Heresy. Rosalind Halstead, Alessandro Fabrizi. Costume designer, Gabriella Pascucci. Music by Craig Armstrong. Production designer, Totua Santoro. Edited by Guido Notari. Director of photography, David Ungaro, AFC. Executive producer, Sienna Aquilini. Executive producers, Aisha Walsh, Stephanie Wilcox. Executive producers, Dante Areola, August Zander. Executive producers, John Schiffman, Jonathan Loughran, Alistair Burlingham, Charlie Dombeck. Executive producers, Marco Cohen, Benedito Habib, Fabrizio Danvito, Daniel Campos Pavoncelli, Alessandro Mascheroni. Executive producers, Peter Touche, Vashali Mistry.
Let me be blunt. Art would not exist without criticism. It would not exist. I like to think of myself and my fellow critics collectively as the banks of a river. And art is the water that flows between us. And we work to channel this flow, guide it, to restrain it.
In the bedroom, a dark-haired man reads from a notebook as he rides an exercise bike.
The tolerance would be... what? Floodplain. Listless expanse of mud and flies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please examine this painting, if you will.
In a library.
What do you feel?
The man lectures a small crowd.
Indifference, am I correct? You're unmoved. Well, let's be honest, this is no more interesting than your average wallpaper, is it? Look at the brush strokes, so rough and clumsy. Almost like a child's painting, no?
A tall woman enters.
Is anyone here familiar with the work of Nils Ingen?
In the apartment.
Well, don't be ashamed. He's not very well known in America. Don't be ashamed. He's not very well known in America. Let me tell you a little bit about Nils.
In the library, Nils, the tall woman looks at a copy of the lecturer's book.
When the Nazis invaded Norway, Nils and his twin sister joined the resistance a year into the occupation. They were betrayed.
James, the lecturer, rehearses at home.
Betrayed, arrested, and transported to the concentration camp in Buchenwald.
In the library, the tall woman sits at the back of the crowd.
Nils kept his sister alive by painting portraits of the camp officers, and this is something for which he felt great shame after the war. So Nils vowed two things.
He rehearses in his bathroom.
Never to paint another human figure, and never to touch a brush again, and therefore...
In the library...
the rough working of the paint. All of Nils's post-war canvases were undertaken either with a palette knife or with his fingers. Nils titled this particular painting Nora, after his sister. She died in 1955 of consumption, which she contracted at Buchenwald. And that grey...
he rehearses as he sits on the toilet.
And that grey... that grey, vaguely avian shape. Some see that as a representation of Nora's soul, slipping its earthly bonds, free at last after enduring so much horror here.
He rehearses at home.
This painting was Nils's last painting. With Nora dead, he refused to eat anything, and nothing but water passed his lips for the next 27 days.
In the library.
He continued to work on the canvas as he weakened, and reportedly, that bird-like shape was the last detail that he added. So I suppose you could see this painting.
James glances at the tall woman.
As a suicide note. A cri de cœur, famous last words, cry from the heart.
He looks at the projector screen, which shows the painting. He rehearses in his apartment.
Looks like a different painting now, doesn't it?
In the library.
It looks like a different painting now. Doesn't it?
Audience members nod.
There's a poignancy to it that you hadn't noticed before, and there's far more technical skill than you first assumed. And all of this simply because of what I, as a critic and an expert, have shared with you. I suppose you could say that I have shaped your experience of this painting.
A glimpse shows James at home.
Would anyone like a print?
The audience members raise their hands.
Let me share one last detail with you. Everything I just told you about Nils and Nora.
In his apartment.
Lies.
Lies.
Lies. Just a pack of lies. I painted this painting.
He points at the projector screen.
And it's trash, and you can't see that, right? It took me 30 minutes, and it's just paint, slapped down without any real care or inspiration. So, is anyone still interested in a print?
Only the tall woman raises her hand.
No, I thought not. I single-handedly made you believe that this was a masterpiece. You believed. You have to admit it. That, my dear friends, is the power of the critic, and that's why you should be careful with someone like me.
In his apartment, James takes a pill. In the library, he gathers his things.
Thank you. Thank you.
The tall woman remains in her seat as the others disperse. At home, James fills a cardboard box with copies of his book, then carries the box out of his office. In the library, the tall woman approaches him.
You're not really how I imagine an art critic would look.
Well, you know what they say about the book and its cover, Miss...
Hollis. Bernice Hollis.
She eats a chip.
Are you interested in art, Miss Hollis?
I just came here for the potato chips. No offense, Mr. Figueres. I just reached a point in my life where I appreciate the value of free things.
Oh, I see.
So that painting... I'd like a print.
She sits on the book table. James looks around, then leans toward her.
There aren't any. That was just what you call an oratorical gesture.
Oh, you're one of those.
On a wedge?
A liar.
That's harsh, don't you think?
If the shoe fits.
Yeah.
At James's house, Bernice lies naked on the bed. He pulls her toward him, and she smiles. He buries his face between her legs. She closes her eyes and tilts her head back. Now she straddles James, and he grabs her breast. Later, James takes a bottle of water from the fridge in his office, then returns to the bedroom. Staring at Bernice in the bed, he takes a sip.
Water?
She nods, and James hands her the bottle.
I wonder when something's just starting, how it's gonna end.
Like what?
Anything. Us, say.
Lighting a cigarette, he sits on the bed.
A week from now, I'll be planning our wedding. Then I'll take you to an opening, and as I look across the room, I'll see you talking to this artist, this broad-shouldered artist, sculptor. Big hands. And as you leave with him, you give me a little wave. Then I'll climb to the top of the Duomo, throw myself off in grief.
You're gonna make me your whore. I'll be turning tricks to support you while you visit your galleries and you write your articles and you sip champagne with your high-class friends.
For love.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I'll catch some disease, lose my teeth, go blind, be dead in a year. All for love.
We'll have babies. Girl named Amy, boy named Matt. We'll move to the States, Connecticut probably. Buy a house, porch with a swing and a brooch.
Babbling.
Of course, and a stone wall. And I'll die first. Some sort of lingering cancer that you'll nurse me through. And then you. And our kids will insist that you died of a broken heart.
I'm gonna get up now. Shower, leave. We'll never see each other again. All you gotta do is lie here and let it happen.
She puts on her underwear.
Got it.
Got it.
She picks up her clothes from the floor. She waves at James with a sneaker in her hand. Smoking his cigarette, James watches her as she enters the bathroom. She leans close to the mirror and stares at her reflection. She starts to wash her hands.
Come in.
James holds up a pill bottle.
Want an upper?
Sure.
They each take a pill.
What are you doing this weekend?
What?
You're supposed to ask me out before you fuck me.
Ever heard of Joseph Cassidy?
The art dealer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Been invited to his estate.
You got rich friends.
Well, I've never met him.
Then why the invite?
I'm guessing he wants me to write a catalogue for his collection, and it would be a nice gig if I could land it. And I bet there'll be some free cucumber sandwiches.
Hmm.
So what do you say?
You be my chauffeur.
She had the driving?
He draws a bath. Nighttime. Glimpses show tall buildings around the city. On a balcony, Bernice leans against the railing and smokes a cigarette. She flicks it away, then faces the glass balcony door. She stares inside at James sleeping in his bed. In the city, a glowing sign atop a tall hotel reads, "The Westin Palace, Milano." Night turns to day. In James's office, stacks of his book, The Power of the Critic, lie on the desk. His bed lies empty.
James, hi. It's Louisa Prentice. It's rather awkward for me to be calling you about this, but the check you gave me was returned by my bank. Give me a call back. Thanks.
Now Bernice rides with James, who drives an SUV down a winding lakeside road.
Who died, little girl?
Your poor Norwegian. I keep thinking he was real.
He was real.
You said you made him up.
No. It is the end. Nils and Nora were real. And Nils survived for a time at Buchenwald by painting the German officers.
For a time.
For a time. In medieval painting, the fly represented sin. So if an artist added a fly to a portrait, for instance, it meant that that person was damned. I suppose you can see where this is headed.
Nils painted flies on the Germans.
He did. Unfortunately, his camp commandant was something of an amateur art historian, and he took exception, and Nils was gutted like a deer, left down the yard for the flies to feast on. You asked.
What about Nora?
Nora spent her post-war years in Paris, drinking too much and painting some badly, I'm afraid. She just wasted away, basically.
That was Nora's painting you showed us, wasn't it?
James smiles.
Why didn't you say so?
Because my story's much more poignant. Nils starving and everything.
Yeah, but it's not true.
Does that matter?
Of course it matters. It's what art's about, isn't it? The truth.
No. I mean, Pumpkin, if it's just about telling the truth, anybody can do it. My job is to separate the good ones from the bad ones.
And how do you do that?
Well, is your name really Bernice?
She smiles at him.
Why would I make that up?
That's not a yes.
That's not a no, either.
They share a smile.
Okay.
At an estate, they pause in their car as the front gate opens. Bernice leans out the passenger window and looks around as James drives through. James turns down a path beside the ivy-covered house. They park the car and get out. James and Bernice peer at the lake, then share a grin. He leans against a railing and Bernice stands a distance away. She gazes down at the water as a boat passes along the lake.
Let's get the bags.
They take suitcases from the car. As they walk toward the main house, James takes Bernice's hand. Inside, a butler carries their suitcases upstairs. James and Bernice follow closely behind. As they go, Bernice regards a large oil painting of people surrounding a woman with a baby in her lap. The butler leads them into a suite.
Lunch is in an hour. Please be prompt.
Thank you.
The butler walks away. James turns to Bernice and raises his brow. Leaning out a window, Bernice gazes at the lake. Stepping away from the window, Bernice slides her face under the lacy white curtains. Smiling, she looks around the room, then lies back on the bed. James watches her.
I was a kid. Exactly the kind of place I dreamed of living.
Princess in the castle.
How about you? What did you want to be when you were a kid?
Well, I was never a kid. I hatched from the egg like this. Fully grown.
Come on.
He sits.
Seriously, you can't tell me you never wanted to paint.
James grins.
Have you ever been to New York?
Yeah.
You know those big banners they hang outside the museums for special exhibitions?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted one.
He spreads his hands out like a banner.
Figueras. I had a teacher in art school. Good teacher.
He lights a cigarette.
She took me aside one day and told me that I was much better at talking about art than doing it, and said it only had to be a tragedy if I made it one.
You still want that banner, though, don't you?
Outside, the sun shines behind a tall tree near the manor house. In the garden, a statue stands alongside a neatly trimmed hedge. A view from an open window overlooks the serene courtyard. Inside, James and Bernice walk through a corridor. He glances into a room as they go.
Follow your heart.
She points ahead and smiles back at him. They enter a study with several paintings hanging on the walls.
Oh.
James admires an abstract piece.
Do you realize how many museums that would consider this their centerpiece? And here, it's just another slab of paint on the wall.
You live alone?
How's that feel, doesn't it?
Must be lonely. What?
Man like Cassidy. It's a choice. Women can't understand that as a rule, the allure of solitude.
And you do?
Oh, yes, that's how I live too. On a slightly more modest scale, but still.
Just a lone wolf.
Scuff all you want. I've been a monk here in Italy. Art, my only mistress.
Uh-huh.
He regards two colorful paintings with the words stammer and sing scrawled on them. Bernice steps to his side.
I bet you he overpaid for these. And 10 years from now, he won't be able to give them away.
Would it help you, Mr. Figueres, if I told you that I had a terrible stammer when I was a child? It took me years to get over it.
I'm so sorry, I didn't know.
A neighbor of mine gave me some advice and try and sing through the words to help ease their passage. This makes my attachment to these pictures seem a bit sentimental, I know, but I like the reminder that they bring. I should never let a thing's worth obscure its value. Miss Hollis, am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Cassidy, welcome to my summer cottage.
Thank you for having us.
Aperitivo, anyone?
The older man pours a drink as they sit.
I really must apologize. I couldn't help but overhear your conversation as I entered. It was fascinating. People in their hunches. And some have the gift and others don't. Always trust your hunches, my dear. You have the gift.
He hands her the glass.
You were quite right to suspect that Mr. Figueres here has been leading a decidedly unmonastic existence during his Italian sojourn. There was a Miss Sophia Rosselli, and then there was a Mrs. Louisa Prentice, and then oh, come on. Don't look so uncomfortable, Mr. Figueres. I invited you over to my house, and I'm bound to make inquiries. By the way, my home life, you completely misread it. This is my wife's estate. It's been in her family for generations. If you'd have come here yesterday, we'd have found the place absolutely swarming with people. I mean, children, grandchildren, dogs, cats, nannies. They all decamped for London this morning, the whole bloody shooting match. You can still smell them a bit, though, can't you? That sort of funny child smell. Jim? Can I call you Jim?
Please.
Just winding you up. I mean, why would you think my children would have a peculiar smell?
Later, the three of them dine together.
Berenice, you've been a bit quiet. I hope we haven't bored you too much.
Oh, not at all.
Maybe I should have made more of an effort to draw you out, but I sense you're someone not overly fond of personal questions.
And why would that be?
I don't know. Just a hunch. Maybe I'm wrong. Where are you from?
Duluth.
Minnesota. Mm-hmm. The Art Institute there. It used to have a really lovely Toulouse-Lautrec, but no more.
When I say Duluth, I mean a small town south of the city.
Which one?
It's quite small, Mr. Cassidy. I'm sure you've never heard of it.
Mm, of course not. Nice to be from a small town, though, isn't it?
How so?
Well, you venture into the world like a newborn, free to be whomever you choose. You know, neither of you have mentioned the empty chair.
I assume that was for your wife.
What if I told you that at the edge of my property there's a dilapidated little house, and in this house there's a man who I invite for lunch every day, and the only response I ever get from him is this empty chair?
Who is it?
This man, my dear young friend, is the reason that I summoned you here.
I don't understand.
Rodolfo, let's have coffee on the terrace, shall we?
Very well, sir.
Outside, Bernice stands at a railing overlooking the lake. Cassidy and James sit nearby.
If you could interview any living artist, who do you think it would be?
Anselm Kiefer.
Kiefer? Kiefer would speak to anyone with an open notebook, I think. Now, put yourself in a bit more rarefied company, okay? No critic has spoken to this guy in over 50 years. It's been that long since anyone's even seen this man's work.
Still not with me.
Okay. If I say to you, Paris, 1968, 12 paintings gone up in flames in the gallery fire.
You're fucking with me. Mm-hmm.
2 days later, on the same smoke-stained walls, an empty picture frame appears. A little note card by it, which read,
Jerome Dabney, number one.
Oh, yeah, my college roommate had a poster of that on her wall.
You're really saying Jerome Dabney, is he?
What was the last you heard of him?
Another fire. About a year ago in his studio and house in France, everything burned down. He lost everything. A lifetime's work went up in flames and no one ever got to see it.
Gone. As if it never existed. He's not a wealthy man. He gets all his money from a charitable trust.
The Dabney Trust?
Yeah, upon whose board I'm very honoured to sit. And in that capacity, I'm to offer the great man accommodations. So now, every morning, I've got Jerome bloody Dabney, sunny and self-beside by four.
The butler, Rodolfo, serves coffee.
Rodolfo?
Sir?
What was Mr. Dabney reading when you picked him up the other day?
Flash art, sir. The March issue. Mr. Figueres' column.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And what was he doing while I was reading it?
Chuckling, sir. He said, This young man is quite amusing.
Berenice, would you mind if I borrow James for a little private conversation?
No.
In Cassidy's office, James pours himself a drink.
I employ a team of investigators to ensure authenticity and chain of title.
I see.
One of them came across a recent piece by you on Modigliani's brushstrokes. Do you remember that?
Yes, of course.
Rather interesting thesis. Helped me overcome some uncertainty over a particular Modigliani provenance. Woman with a red scarf. We made a rather profitable sell to the Tate.
Oh, it's in the Tate now.
Yeah, it kind of sparked my curiosity, though. So I had my people do a bit more digging.
Mm-hmm.
You were quite the boy wonder, weren't you, James? Reading your old articles, one would have thought you'd be running a museum by now.
Yeah, well...
What happened, James? Embezzlement, right?
Well, that makes it sound like something it wasn't.
Mm. What was it, then?
The gallery had an account for incidental expenses, and I thought it would be all right to borrow a small amount and then repay it.
Sounds like something pretty easy to sort out.
I didn't handle that situation very well. I had more of a temper back then.
Oh, did you? Mature with age, have you?
What is this about, Mr. Cassidy?
Redemption. Think of the splash it would make. The first critic to interview Jerome Debney in over 50 years to see and describe his current work and, you know, I could pull quite a few strings and you could be running a major museum soon.
And why would you do this for me?
I'd value a Debney, James. And I'd like you to procure one for me.
How am I supposed to do that?
Oh. That's a transaction between you and Mr. Debney, isn't it?
Yes, but what's to keep me from doing the interview without getting you the painting?
Cassidy leans closer.
Did someone pay you to write that Modigliani article? A man called Charles Clay. Charles Clay served me, woman with the red scarf.
James stands.
Did you know you're helping to validate a forgery? Or you duped as well.
It's not a forgery.
Anyway, be the end of your fucking career, wouldn't it?
Wearing an uneasy look, James goes to the window and gazes outside. He turns to Cassidy.
You sold it to the Tate.
Well, I know, but I rely on the expertise of scholars in these matters.
James turns away.
Anyway, I'm off to London tomorrow morning, so you and Berenice can have the run of the place. See what you can manage.
James sips his drink and gazes off in thought. Later in his suite, James lies shirtless in bed, staring at the open bathroom door. Sitting up, he takes a cigarette from the nightstand and lights it. He takes a pill bottle and pours it in his hand as Berenice steps out of the bathroom.
Woman?
You got a habit, Captain?
Just a little boost now and then.
How many a day?
Who's counting?
Where I'm from? That's called a habit.
Duluth, huh?
She grabs a cigarette and he lights it.
Thought there was an accent.
A Duluth accent?
Minnesota. Something weird with vowels.
I thought all addicts were hapless losers.
Whoa, are we fighting?
Only if you want to.
Our first squabble. Okay, bring it on. Call me a name.
Asshole.
Put effort into it.
Bastard. Son of a bitch. Piece of shit. Motherfucker. Cocksucker.
Say something bad about my character and make it sting.
You treat serious things as if they were trivial, and trivial things as if they were serious.
Come on. You had one more go, then I will show you how it's done.
How many days do you think I got left?
Left?
To live.
Well, I mean, what kind of question is that?
Oh, there's a number, right? For both of us. Days, hours, minutes. After this minute right here, one less.
That's how it works.
So why waste it like this?
She leans closer to him.
We're friends, right?
The best.
So who gives a fuck where I'm from?
She stares into his eyes. Nighttime. The lake ripples outside the estate. James and Bernice sleep in their room. Our view slowly closes on a sculpture of a head lying on a table by an open window. A fly lands on James's face, then crawls into his nose. He startles awake. Closing one nostril, he blows his nose. Bernice rolls over and puts her arm around him. He gazes at her, then strokes her arm. Daytime. Glimpses show two housekeepers draping furniture with white sheets. In the dining room, Bernice writes a postcard. Rodolfo serves her breakfast. He notices her writing.
I can mail that for you, ma'am.
Oh.
If you like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
She checks the card, then hands it to him.
Thank you.
He walks away, and James enters.
Morning, sir.
Morning.
Have you got a pen pal, Sugar Plum?
Just my mama.
Back in old Duluth.
I had to tell her I met a boy.
He smiles and sits, placing his pill bottle on the table.
Not a word.
She gives an obliging shrug.
Watch.
James lays down a napkin, then sets a banana on top. He props a spoon on the banana and places a pill in its bowl. He readies his hand over the end of the spoon and grins at Bernice. She nods, and he launches the pill into his mouth.
Good one.
Very good one.
Man of many skills.
That's right. I had the weirdest dream last night.
Weird is how they generally come, in my experience.
I woke up real early. I heard someone whispering, so I went to the door, cracked it open. And there you were, down the corridor in a robe with Cassidy, and he gave you an envelope, a thick one.
And here I was thinking flying horses, sex with your mother, that kind of weird.
So I went back to bed and I lay there wondering why would Cassidy give her an envelope full of cash?
Her being me.
She looks at him and her smile slowly fades.
This is a dream we're talking about, right?
Is it?
You're a funny one, aren't you?
She takes a bite of bread. By a pool, James and Bernice lie on deck chairs. A maid brings a pitcher of water and sets it on the table beside them. A white-bearded man approaches.
Oh, look. I'll tell our grandchildren about this one. I came here a pooper, but I'll leave a prince. Oh, fuck him.
I saw blue once. Genuine blue, you understand? Platonic blue. In a pool much like this, I was underwater, staring upwards at the sky. And perhaps it was merely a deficit of oxygen. But for a moment, blue.
He sits.
I've been searching for it ever since.
He smiles at James.
Mr. Fieras, I thought it might be you. You shaved your beard. You must grow it back. It adds character.
James stands and shakes his hand.
Honored, Mr. Debney. And startled. How did you,
Your column, every month, with this little photo. Oh, it's a fine thing to see a young man with such a clear eye. And your beautiful friend, you hope to protect her from my charm. She has a name, I assume.
Miss Berenice Hollis?
She shakes Debney's hand.
Jerome Debney. At your service, Miss Hollis.
It's an honor, Mr. Debney.
He motions to her chair.
Please.
She sits.
May I be direct in the modern way? Mr. Cassidy has brought us together. Why, it doesn't matter. He's a collector. And collectors, as we both know, are odd creatures. I assume an arrangement has been forged, an agreement that suits you both. I don't need fish to know, no. One of the great pleasures in being an artist is that one need not traffic with the world in this fashion. I presume that you would like an interview. Tape recorder spinning away.
James smirks.
I cannot abide such things. The conversation, natural, informal. This, perhaps, might be possible, nothing more. Would such an approach assuage you?
That would mean the world to me. The Holy Grail be the greatest honor.
But should it come so easily?
Excuse me?
What have you suffered? The king invites you to his palace. You sun yourselves by its pool. The Grail approaches and presents itself. No battles, no trials. The gods would never approve.
Mr. Debney, it was merely a metaphor.
What power lurks in metaphors? Are you a swimmer? One length, underwater, and I'll speak with you.
But Mr. Debney,
two lengths. If your next word is anything but yes, it'll be four lengths.
Very well.
Debney turns to Berenice.
My mother taught me how to haggle.
James walks to the pool and takes a pill.
If you have nothing to lose, you must be merciless. Come, sit beside me and we'll cheer him on together.
At the edge of the pool, James takes off his shirt.
I didn't expect you to be so sociable, Mr. Debney.
One of the things I've learned in my long stay upon this darkling plain. Most things, most people, they're not what you'd expect.
James dives in and swims underwater.
Are you what one might expect?
What might that be?
A stone? Perhaps an egg.
He grabs her hand and pokes it.
Question being, how deep the hardness goes. We'd need to drop you to know for certain.
He turns to the pool.
Bravo! Halfway!
He turns back.
Your old friends?
Freshly minted.
He is an ambitious young man. So if you are an egg, I hope you'll be careful.
Trust me, I'm anything but an egg.
Do you know the saddest egg of all? The egg that believes it's a stone.
James stops swimming laps.
Is there anything I might say that could dissuade you from writing about me in your magazine? I suspected as much. I go now where you are not welcome to my studio for 3 hours. After that, a boat ride, and you're welcome to accompany me if you wish. After the boat ride, a shower, and then dinner, for which you are also welcome. The meal, not the shower. Is that acceptable?
James nods. Debney turns to Berenice and takes her hand. She leans closer.
Such sweet sorrow.
She smiles and he walks away. Pausing, Debney faces James.
Did you find my blue under there?
The old man smiles and leaves.
You okay, champ?
James looks exhausted. In his room, James towels off his hair as he gazes out a window at the lake. He turns to Berenice, who dresses.
How did you end up with such a pretty name?
Waiting for me when I arrived.
Doesn't strike me as a common choice in Minnesota.
You gonna dance to this tune again?
Tell me.
My mother bet my Aunt Sally that I'd be a girl. Which I am, as you maybe noticed. So, Berenice, bringer of victory.
What did they bet?
A new set of pickling jars.
Oh, you're good.
Lying's easy when you tell the truth.
He lights a cigarette.
It's the quirky details that carry the day. Aunt Sally, pickling jars.
Mills vowing never to touch a brush again. Nora dying of consumption.
James strokes her leg.
Want to know about Nora? Ask Stepney. He probably met her in Paris.
He reaches under her dress and she grabs his hand.
Almost time for a boat ride.
Wearing a slight smile, she steps away.
You're on your own for that. If I don't rest, I can't make dinner.
She sits on the bed and gives him a look.
What?
She shrugs.
We're not supposed to talk about it. That's the deal, right?
It's not so complicated, Honey Bunch. I had a deadline, the pills helped. Then I started needing more. Then it wasn't about the deadlines anymore. I can end it. I'm just waiting for the right moment. And I can certainly hear how that sounds, and it's not like that.
Bernice maintains her gaze as she puts on a sneaker. James looks away.
Yeah. You're probably right. We shouldn't talk about it.
He takes a drag from his cigarette and walks off with his towel. Wearing a troubled look, Bernice gazes after him. Outside, Debney leans on his cane as he gazes over the lake. Bernice steps out and he smiles at her.
Where's our Galahad?
Resting. Sends his regrets.
One more remote dinner with our little escapade.
Where are you taking me?
Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild.
James watches them from the bedroom window as they walk away arm in arm. He quickly walks away. A view from the lake shows the luxurious estate on the shore. James emerges from the house and paces across the gravel driveway. He looks back at the manor as he goes. Flicking his cigarette, he takes a bicycle and rides away. James pedals down a wooded path. He glances around as he goes. He pauses at a fork in the road and gazes down the two paths. He continues down the left-hand route. Elsewhere, Bernice walks arm in arm with Debney.
Did you know a woman named Nora Ingen?
His smile fades and he faces Bernice.
Nora.
He glances off.
A beautiful and broken Nora.
He takes a seat on a low wall.
What do you know of her?
Only what James told me. The concentration camps, their brother painting the Germans, the flies.
Flies? A fairy tale. To give meaning where there was none.
It's not true.
The camps were not a place where paintings were made. The idea of such a thing, it's obscene. Niels died like all the others. Packed into a narrow room. Guest.
How do you know?
She told me.
Nora.
We were not very good to her, the men in my circle. We passed her around like a talisman, daring ourselves to kiss the tiny numbers tattooed on her forearm. We were callow when we should have been kind. Now you know the worst of Jerome Debney. We're still friends?
Of course, Mr. Debney. We'll always be friends.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
He takes Bernice's hand and they continue down the path. Elsewhere, James rides his bike to a modest home surrounded by trees. He looks around as he dismounts. He leans his bike against a low fence and tries the front door. Finding it locked, he goes to a shuttered window and tries to open it. He tries to peer through the shutters, then walks around the side of the house. On the lake, Debney and Bernice ride a motorboat away from the shore. The wind whips Bernice's dress as she sits at the bow of the boat. She wears a serene smile. Reaching the back of the house, James looks around. He pauses as he spots a tall bird standing in a cage. James tugs on the back door. He throws his hands up in frustration, then continues around the porch. He tries a side door. He tugs on window shutters. Swinging open, they slam into his nose and it bleeds. He presses the sleeve of his shirt to his nostrils and peers through the window. Closing the shutters, he walks away. Now James rides his bike down the wooded path, in a cove with Bernice and Debney.
A favorite spot of mine. One must labor to apprehend it.
She swats at flies.
And those surely don't help.
He leans against a rowboat.
I try to think of them as regrets. One can either feel tormented or learn to endure their presence.
I obviously carry mine less gracefully than you.
Well, then you must tell me a secret, something shameful that will ease your burden.
Bernice shakes muck off the sole of her shoe.
I'm a teacher.
A fine one, I'm sure.
I made a mistake.
What sort?
An indiscretion with a colleague.
Married, I assume.
She nods and takes a seat next to Debney.
Every year I have the freshman girls for help. Mm-hmm. The facts of life, that kind of thing. How not to get pregnant.
The teacher was not such a good student.
Her eyes on the water, Bernice shakes her head.
Officially, I'm on leave to have a cyst removed. I have a friend, a best friend. She's older, married. Before I left, I told her everything, and there was this moment when I was talking, and she gave me this look. It's just a flash, you know, reflexive, like she wanted to spit on me. Stung. Keeps stinging. So when I got to Italy, I thought, why not play the whore for a little while, see how it feels?
And does it suit you, this new mask?
She gives a small shrug.
Turns out I'm all right at it.
You have to be careful, my dear. A mask can be a perilous thing. When I take mine off at night, another waits beneath.
And under that?
So many years, Miss Hollis. Decades. And it's masks all the way down by now.
Debney stares off in thought.
And you?
He mimes lifting a mask from her face.
Is there anything left?
Wearing a contemplative look, she nods.
I think so.
And it's not too late, is it?
They share a smile. Bernice gazes at a ruined building nearby. In their suite, James lies in the bathtub, holding a washcloth to his head and a cigarette between his fingers. Blood stains the area under his nose. He spots a housefly crawling on the edge of the tub. He slowly lifts his leg, then kicks the fly away. He takes a drag from his cigarette, then dips it in the water. He drops the butt on the floor, then leans his head back. Downstairs, Bernice enters the mansion. She walks to the stairs. Pausing, she looks into another room where workers cover a painting with a white cloth. Looking behind her, she paces across the entryway. Entering the dining room, she glances around at the covered furniture. Circling the table, she passes a mirror covered with white cloth. Pausing, she faces the doorway, then rubs her neck. She walks back to the entryway. Bernice goes upstairs. Entering the suite, she finds James's bloodied shirt on the floor.
James?
She enters the bathroom where he lies in the tub.
Scott is still standing, checking a little. Just slip on the stairs. Tell Papa all about the boat ride.
I think I lost 3 pounds to mosquitoes. But I like him. He's a fine old man.
What do you two love best to talk about?
This and that.
Not the other thing?
Never on a first date. What kind of girl you take me for? Seem to think I should tell you the truth.
About what?
Myself.
Oh. And what would that be?
Small town girl made a mistake. And way over her head, paddling about with sharks like you.
She playfully splashes him.
Little Bo Peep, huh?
Pretty much.
Tell it to Aunt Sally.
Bernice stares into James's eyes, then walks away. She pulls down her bathing suit and sits on the toilet.
Aren't you the little lady?
A bit late for that, turns out.
Did I miss any local sights?
You took me to some ruins.
Just at the lake?
Just outside the property. Like the first person to set foot there in 100 years. It scares me to think of him out there alone, though, on the water.
Why?
She flushes and returns to James.
He capsizes. No one will ever find him.
Probably what he wants. Vanish without a trace. Be the perfect close to his legend.
Nobody wants to end up at the bottom of a lake, Chief.
James stands and points to a towel. Bernice gives it to him.
Thank you. Do me a favor?
What are friends for?
Tonight, when we're at his house, I need to take a photo of whatever he's working on. Can you distract him a bit, please?
Why?
Well, there's no way he's ever
going to... Why do you need to take a picture?
For my work, for my writing, reference.
Seems kind of underhanded, don't you think?
Underhanded?
He's inviting us into his home.
It's the memory aid, Pollyanna. I'll delete it when I'm done.
James looks in the mirror.
What makes you think he's going to show you anything anyway?
He wipes his nose.
My irresistible charisma.
In Debney's living room.
No, Mr. Figueres. No, no, no. It's a ridicule. Why ruin a pleasant evening? Let us finish our meal. I'll pretend you never raised the idea. And we'll all part as friends.
You have a duty, Mr. Debney.
To whom?
Posterity. When you've departed, the world will come rushing in. Wouldn't it be better to share your work now with me while you're still here to explain it? I can help you do this. Together, we...
Debney stops him.
What is the earliest example of art you can think of?
The caves, I suppose. Lascaux, Altamira.
Odd place to paint, wouldn't you agree? A hole in the ground? Can you explain the impulse?
Well, it's a long way from my field of expertise, but I suppose there's some sort of ritualized element here. I mean, the womb, Mother Earth, a descend into...
I have a much simpler hypothesis. They had no desire to share their work. They were hiding it from eyes they considered unworthy.
But I suppose you could also say it was a way of safeguarding the paintings for future generations. After all, their work was discovered, just as yours shall be. And I'll be there to write of it, Mr. Debney, with you or without you.
Oh, he's such an earnest young man. He'll just be so seriously of such foolish matters.
Oh, nothing could be less foolish.
Come. Let me show you my studio.
Are you serious?
I think you'd be quite amused.
Both of us?
Everyone. It's time. Past time.
James hands Bernice a glass.
Take this.
What?
When I give you the nod, drop it. What? Trust me.
She hesitates, then follows the others.
We have to be rather fleet of foot, I'm afraid. I have a rendezvous this evening with a local widow.
And I can write about this. Would you show us?
Yeah, my blessing. Indeed, I'd be rather intrigued to learn what you make of it. This is everything, you understand. Nothing else exists.
Grinning, he enters another room. James gives Berenice a look, then they follow Dedney into a cramped bedroom. He unlocks a door. Leading them inside, he turns on fluorescent lights.
This one has been quite tricky. I value your insight.
James examines a canvas.
Too much blue?
He looks baffled.
I don't understand.
Those are finished. More or less. Though if the muse calls, I'll return.
James looks through blank canvases leaning against the wall.
But, Mr. Dedney, there's nothing here.
No?
Dedney sits before the easel and gazes at the white canvas on it.
The blue. I keep thinking too much.
Mr. Dedney, I...
Dedney raises his hand.
You know the fire, the first, at the gallery in Paris.
Yes, of course.
He turns to Berenice.
For 3 weeks, the world picked up Jerome Dedney, turned him this way and that, covered him with words. I'll be honest, I thought I was quite the success. A genius, even.
You were? Oh.
A carelessly discarded cigarette. In less than an hour. Nothing. You would have thought I'd lost a loved one, how I was treated. Letters of condolence, mournful embraces. And yet, in my heart, a great burden lifted. All those words, all those opinions. That was the meaning of the empty frame. It was a joke. Fill this with your chatter. And look how they did with it. I've seen it on a T-shirt.
Yeah.
From then on in, there was no one who could make my work anything other than what it was. It was Eden, Mr. Fieras. For nearly 50 years, I walked naked in the garden. And then one morning, I woke with a pain. Here.
He points to his heart.
It was nothing. Indigestion. But it reminded me of the serpent. The serpent that lurks in all our gardens. One day, Jerome Dedney will be no more. And the world, as you so astutely put it, will come rushing in.
You burned the villa?
Berenice smiles.
I wish you could have seen the colors, my dear. The flames feeding on the paint. It was quite lovely, I assure you.
Jesus.
Now, every morning, I take the palette, brush, and I paint without the paint. I have become my own cave. A deep breath, young man, it will pass.
You're a thief. Your work belongs to the world, the entire fucking world, and you've stolen it. It's despicable.
Berenice eyes the canvas.
I think somehow you might be right. The blue, it does seem a little off somehow.
Along the bottom, no?
Right.
You have an excellent eye.
There's writing on the back.
When I'm truly finished, I scrawl the title, the date, and my initials. For posterity's sake, you understand?
The Burnt Orange Heresy.
A favorite.
What does it mean?
It's a bone tossed to the critics, those ravenous dogs. They can wear themselves out chewing on it, searching for meaning where there is none.
I'll wait outside. I'm sorry, sir, but I lack the stomach for this.
James leaves.
James.
Leave him. He has wounds to lick.
James steps out of Debney's home, the modest house he tried to enter earlier. Walking across the front porch, he lights a cigarette. James takes a pill. He sets down his bag as Berenice and Dedney walk outside. Debney locks the door behind them.
I'm afraid I must part ways with you here, my dear. If I tarry much longer, the widow will have gone to sleep. I wish you much happiness, my dear, and a long life in which to enjoy it.
It's been an honor, and an even greater pleasure.
Debney turns to James.
I know you're an unhappy young man right now, but I believe in time you will understand.
James nods. Debney kisses Bernice on the cheek.
Good night.
He walks away. Eyeing James, Bernice steps off the porch and takes his hand. As they start walking, James glances back at Debney, who heads in the opposite direction. A glimpse shows the trees in the woods. At the estate, statues stand atop a concrete railing. James and Bernice walk through the grounds.
Still friends, partner?
Hey, I'm sorry, but that was a shock.
Got your scoop, didn't you? Not the one you thought.
Fuck.
What?
I forgot my bag.
I'll come with you.
No, wait. Go pack and meet me by the car.
The car?
Listen, I need to write this now, and I can't do that here, so...
Are you serious?
Yes, I am serious. Please, do it. Promise, I'll make it up to you. Okay?
Bernice wears an uneasy look as James walks away. Glancing back at James, she goes to the manor house. In Debney's studio, the blank canvas stands on its easel. A glimpse shows a table laden with art supplies. James kicks open a door. He picks up his bag and enters Debney's house. He grabs a poker from the fireplace. In the bedroom, he tries to open the studio door but finds it padlocked. He wedges the poker into the lock and pries it open. He opens the door, sets down the poker, and enters the studio. He turns on the fluorescent lights. James takes a blanket from the bed and carries it into the studio. He moves the easel, then spreads the blanket on the floor. He takes the canvas labeled Burnt Orange Heresy and sets it on the blanket. He wraps it up, then secures it with duct tape. He takes a pillowcase and fills it with tubes of paint and paintbrushes. He carries the covered canvas and the pillowcase into the other room and goes through Debney's mail. James finds a letter with Debney's signature at the bottom. He puts the letter in his bag, then glances around the studio. He crumples paper and tosses it on the floor in front of the blank canvases propped against the wall. He takes a bottle from the supply table and douses the canvases with the liquid inside. James opens another bottle. Knocking over the easel, he pours more liquid around the rest of the studio. He tosses the bottle away, then knocks over the rack of paper. Picking up a crumpled sheet, he lights it. James sets the burning paper on the floor. He watches the flames spread to the canvases. James leaves the studio as the fire spreads to the supply table. He picks up the pillowcase and covered canvas and carries them outside. Under cover of night, James paces down the wooded path. At Debney's house, a view through a window shows smoke spreading into the living room. Reaching the estate, James walks briskly through the grounds. He carries the canvas and pillowcase to his car and loads them into the trunk. He sets his bag in the back seat. Glancing over his shoulder, he quickly tucks in his shirt. Bernice stands behind him holding a bag. James takes it and loads it into the car. He notices her staring at him.
What? Hey, train's leaving. Get on it. Come on.
He gets in the driver's seat and she wheels her suitcase to the car. She loads her luggage in the back seat, then gets in the SUV. She glances at James as she buckles her seatbelt. He drives away. Our view lingers on a tall statue standing at the center of the driveway. As James drives through the city, Bernice sits with her eyes closed.
Embers, ashes, afterglow. Into the good night, into the gentle night. Detonate, embers, ashes, acceptance. Demural and acceptance. Detonate, demural and acceptance.
Acting a little strange, boss.
How long have you known me?
A few days.
So how can you possibly say what's strange and what's normal?
Bernice gives James an accepting look. He turns onto a road.
Home sweet home.
He approaches an apartment building. He parks at a curb, and he and Bernice get out. They take their luggage from the back seat. The pair heads to the apartment building across the street. In an elevator, Bernice leans her head against James's shoulder with her eyes closed. She wakes up as he lets go of her hand. They leave the elevator and enter James's apartment. James turns on the lights. They enter the bedroom, and Bernice lies face first on the bed. James walks off.
Where are you going?
Got a good rising.
No?
Well, when the muse calls. Come on, be a good girl.
He enters the hall and shuts the bedroom doors behind him. Standing before the mirrored doors, he stares off with a thoughtful gaze, then walks down the hall. In the bedroom, Bernice takes off her shoes, then lies on her stomach. In his office, James sets a pill bottle on a table. He takes a seat and downs two pills. Wearing a thoughtful gaze, he slowly sets the bottle back on the table. He takes off his shoes. He looks toward the hall. Pacing away from the table, he pauses in the office doorway. He walks off. Outside, James leaves his apartment building and goes to his car. He opens his trunk and pulls out the pillowcase and canvas. He sets the items on the street, then closes the trunk. In his office, James sets the pillowcase down and leans the canvas against a chair. He unwraps it, then takes a step back as he stares. James takes a pill and lights a cigarette. He empties the art supplies out of the pillowcase, then cleans an ashtray. He squirts a tube of brown paint into the ashtray and a tube of blue paint onto a tray beside it. He swirls the brown paint with a brush, then pours drying oil onto the blue paint. He dabs a newspaper with both of the colors and inspects it under a lamp. Standing before the canvas, he pops another pill. He takes a seat and gazes at the blank piece as he smokes. Later, James takes off his pants and shirt. He takes off his watch, then answers his phone.
Mr. Cassidy?
Seems there's been a fire on my estate, James.
Yes, sir, that's right. That is right.
Devney Studio?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Will you please assure me that this happened after you procured the painting?
It did.
So, my painting is the only Devney in existence then, right?
Yes, I suppose you could say that, sir, yeah.
And Devney, he's...
He was away for the evening.
I mean, how much more can he really paint? I mean, he's old.
He is old.
Send me a text of it, can you?
No, I can't do that. It's in my car. It's hidden, and I can't risk taking it out. Miss Hollis is still with me.
Well, can you describe it?
He turns to the blank canvas.
Well, it's kind of hard to describe, to be honest.
Well, it's your bloody job describing pictures, isn't it?
James takes a drag from his cigarette and scratches his forehead.
James.
It's called the Burnt Orange Heresy.
It's orange? It's burnt.
Like the sun. Like the setting sun. It's a self-portrait, really. It is. It's, the artist alone in the Empyrean, descending toward a final horizon.
Glimpses show James painting on the canvas.
In full acceptance.
He forges Devney's signature.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
In the bedroom, Bernice lies awake. Wearing a weary look, she sits up on the edge of the bed. She slowly gets to her feet, then opens her suitcase. She changes into a long white tank top bearing a stylized American flag. Staring out the balcony door, she removes her hair tie. Later, she walks down the hallway with a toothbrush in hand. She glances into James's office, then spots his shadow in the bathroom. She enters the office where the canvas stands with its back toward her. Walking in front of the canvas, she stares at it with a stunned look. She spots painting supplies scattered on the table nearby. She touches the center of the orange-colored canvas, staining her fingertip. In the bathroom, James cleans a paintbrush in the sink. He shakes off his hands, then turns off the bathtub faucet.
Tell me why this isn't a terrible thing.
Bernice holds up her finger.
It's not what it looks like.
What does it look like? What does it look like, James?
Listen to me for a second. That lecture for those tourists, right? I do that 20, 30 times a year
€200 a pop in Milan or Florence or Rome, and it's the same blank-faced American tourist with the same stupid fucking questions every time about Raphael and Da Vinci, as if no one else ever painted anything. Daphne is stealing from me. Yes, he is, and from you and from everybody.
This isn't who you are, Slick.
Pumpkin, you haven't the slightest idea who I am.
You know what we need to do.
What?
We need to get rid of that awful painting.
No, don't you dare.
Let go, James.
Don't you dare. Hurry. Have you any idea how valuable that is? That's the only Daphne in the world. Why is he paying you?
Who?
Cassidy. To spy on me.
That was a dream. You said that was a
Please
dream.
Please go tell him. Tell him. He won't believe you because he wants it to be real. And it is real. Do you know what's going to happen now? You're going to get out of my apartment. You're going to get out of my life, and you're going to go back to your cheap whoring and sucking and fucking your throat through there.
They fall into the bathtub, and James holds Bernice's head underwater. He grimaces as she struggles. In the hallway, a roving view slowly moves away from the open bedroom door. In the bathroom, Bernice goes limp. She drops to the floor. James stares at her as he rises from the tub. Wearing a panicked look, James enters the bedroom and glances around. He steps out to the balcony and leans on the railing. Returning to the bedroom, he slips and falls. He dries himself with a towel, then puts on his pants. He gathers Bernice's belongings from the bed and the floor. He packs her suitcase. Pausing, James looks into the hallway. He puts on a sweatshirt, then pulls a sheet off the bed. Walking down the hall, he looks in the bathroom. He finds Bernice gone. He looks into another room. James slowly steps into the room and pauses as he stares at the floor. He puts down the bedsheet and follows a set of wet footprints down the hallway. A glimpse shows Bernice sitting in a stairwell. James looks through the window of the elevator door. He goes through another doorway nearby. Bernice looks up as James enters the stairwell. She starts to flee.
No. Easy. Easy.
She cowers in a corner. She sinks into a crouch as he sits on the stairs. James moves closer to her. He touches her face.
Can you stand up? Get you back to the apartment. Okay.
Trembling, she nods again. James stands.
Come here.
He helps her to her feet. He pulls her into a hug.
I'm so sorry. Okay.
He helps her to the stairs.
You can do this. It's going to be fine.
In the apartment, James sits Bernice on the bed. He cradles her face.
I'm sorry. You do know that, right? How sorry I am. I could buy you a plane ticket. How would that sound? First class, anywhere you want to go.
He's paying you, Cassidy.
Oh, no, it's not like that. He's letting me write about it. It's actually the opportunity of a lifetime to take a Adepney, to be
a... It's not real, James.
It is so real.
He smiles and kisses her.
Please get dressed.
You can't even see, can you? I can help you.
We're wasting time.
Will you let me help you?
He picks up an ashtray.
Please, we need to get you to the airport and...
Where's the fly?
James stares at her.
Shouldn't there be a fly?
I need you to be quiet now, Miss Hollis, please. Do you understand?
Where's that you?
Be quiet.
That's please. Why you tell the story, isn't it?
I'm not...
You're the fly. Know it.
Please be quiet.
You're a fraud, a fake, buzzing about.
He turns away from her.
Be quiet, please.
He faces her.
It's not real, James.
She gives a slight smile.
You're not real.
He hits her in the face with the ashtray. Bernice collapses. James rests the ashtray on his lap. Now glimpses show James's SUV traveling through the city. Gripping the steering wheel, he wears a tense look. He takes a drag off a cigarette, then tosses it out the window. The SUV travels down the winding lakeside road. Glancing off, James furrows his brow. He parks the car in the cove near the ruined building. He gets out, zips up his sweatshirt, and pulls the hood over his head. He glances around, then opens the trunk. He pulls a blanket-wrapped body out of the car. James drags the body toward the ruined building. Pausing, he stares off. He drags the body past the abandoned rowboat to the water. James lays a heavy rock on top of the body and secures it in place with duct tape. Blonde hair pokes through a hole at the top of the wrapping. Wiping off his hands, James takes a step back. He grabs the body by the feet and drags it toward the water. Flies flutter above the ground. Reaching the water, James drags the body into a deeper part of the cove. He pushes the body underwater. Letting go, James stares at the bubbling surface. He crawls to the shallow water and stands. Walking toward the shore, he stumbles. He climbs out of the water and sits on the ground. James falls on his back. He sits up and looks toward the lake as a boat floats into view outside the mouth of the cove. Wearing an alarmed look, James gets to his feet and hurries away. Fade to black. In a newscast, a logo reads, Spectrum News, NY1. An anchor addresses us.
Legendary artist Jerome Debney has died at the age of 84. Debney reportedly suffered a heart attack at the estate of art dealer Joseph Cassidy on Lake Como.
The empty frame represented freedom. It represented a new way to see. It opened up a way to see.
Glimpses show more newscasts.
Le père Jérôme Debney meurt au bord du lac de Como. Il avait 84 ans.
Reclusive painter Jerome Debney has died today of a heart attack. The artist had just turned 84.
It's like that, the disappearance of the act. It's the essence of Debney's, I would say, greatness as an artist.
Debney's long career was blighted by a series of accidental fires, destroying a gallery in Paris, his villa in the south of France, and most recently his studio on the Cassidy estate. Art critic James Figueres, who recently visited Debney's studio and is the only critic to have examined Debney's late work, says that both as a man and an artist, Debney possessed the sincerity, depth, and unflinching directness of a prophet. He was a voice calling out in the desert.
The newscast shows a photo of Debney's eyes. In New York City, billboards read, Debney, from the ruins, James Figueres. Outside a building, a hanging banner reads, The Cassidy Gallery. Inside, well-dressed people mingle. A waiter carries a tray of champagne. James signs a copy of his book about Debney, then hands it to a woman. Cassidy approaches.
Well done, James.
Good work.
Excuse me?
Your essay, the real thing. I mean, so rare nowadays.
I sent an invitation to your friend.
My friend?
Yes, you know, Berenice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, her. Hmm?
I had to get a professional acquaintance to do a bit of research, because she seems to have disappeared. Difficult thing to do, really, disappear. Usually you need a bit of help.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, with anything complicated, you need a bit of assistance. A bloke I know tried it years ago, got into a bit of a scrape. Not quite as easy as you think. Lost touch with her, have you?
Yes, you might say that, yeah.
Yeah, young love. So volatile. Yeah. I suppose you had to sacrifice her to your work. Art can be such a harsh mistress, can't she?
Oh, she can.
Yeah. Let's mingle a bit, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Come.
They walk together.
Duluth seemed a bit unlikely, didn't it, really?
In which way?
Well, you know, that's where she was from, really. Just like she said. Tiny town, south of the city. Mm-hmm. Lived with her mother and an aunt. Taught school, if you can imagine that. Do you want a drink?
No, thanks.
No, thanks very much.
James takes a pill.
I think he might have sent her a drawing.
Who?
Debney.
What do you mean?
Her mother said she received a drawing of Berenice. Postmark Italy. Oh. I was a bit upset about that, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Till I found out it wasn't signed, and so it's bloody worthless. Such a shame.
Oh, yes, what a shame, what
a
shame.
Such a shame. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry too much, I mean... She'll float back into view one of these days. I mean, they always do. Yeah. Here we are. The jewel in the crown.
They approach the burnt orange heresy painting.
You can't smoke in here, James, sorry. Oh, I almost forgot. This was found in Debney's desk after he drowned.
He hands James an envelope.
I thought he died of a heart attack.
Well, I'll take a pick, one of the two. I mean, he was in the pool anyway.
Was he swimming?
Well, he fell in somehow. I mean, Rodolfo found it. It's all bloated and blue in the face. A bit upsetting, really. Hang on a minute. Just going to take this from the Guardian. Hello?
Cassidy walks away.
James Figueres. Evelina McCree from Arcus.
Hello.
First of all, brilliant job. Your restraint is what I found most extraordinary. It's as if you wrote an essay on the solar system and refused to mention the sun. A lesser critic would have hung his whole thesis on it. But you chose to leave it for us to discover. To be shocked by, even.
Thank you.
The ultimate mark of Debney. Hidden right in the centre of things, as the truth always is. Almost as if he imprinted the mark of Cain on his own forehead, don't you think? Or is that too big a reach?
Excuse me?
The fingerprint.
They look at the painting. James stares intensely at the orange-colored canvas. He steps closer. He finds Berenice's fingerprint at the center of the painting.
James.
James.
James, come and meet Philip Ricciardi, so from the Tate Modern. You really like him.
You know, don't you?
No, what?
Just say it.
Say what?
The truth.
The truth, James?
Yes. True. Come on.
Philip.
Joseph.
Oh, hello. You know James.
James shakes the new arrival's hand, then looks back at the painting. He examines the envelope Cassidy gave him. Glancing around, he opens it. James scans the crowd, then pours the contents of the envelope into his hand. He forces a smile for a photo. Looking down, he stares at a collection of dead flies in his palm. He glances around the room with an uneasy look, then closes his fingers around the flies. Now a glimpse shows a house in a residential neighborhood.
Yeah, really, at worst, we're going to have just a nuisance round of flurries, particularly in central Minnesota. With a real
inside, a roving view moves past the kitchen stove, where steam rises from a pot. Pickling jars stand on the counter nearby. The refrigerator bears photos of the young Berenice. At the center, a painting depicts the adult Berenice's face. A copy of the Duluth Star Ledger hangs behind the portrait. A close view shows the photos of young Berenice. A headline in the newspaper reads, "Esco woman still missing." Our view drifts to the blue-colored portrait of Berenice's smiling face. The bottom of the painting features Debney's signature over an image of the lake's surface. Fade to black. Remaining opening credits. Executive producers, Marie Gabrielle Stewart, Peter Watson, Eris Beletsis. Produced by David Zander. Produced by William Horberg. Produced by David Lancaster. Based on the book by Charles Wolford. Screenplay by Scott B. Smith. Directed by Giuseppe Capitondi. Credits roll. First Assistant Director, Inti Carboni. Second Assistant Director, Luca Pedrini. Music Supervisor, Laura Katz. Line Producer, Stefano Baraghi. Production Coordinator, Matteo Barletta. Unit Manager, Carlo Sangantini. Transportation Coordinator, Alessandro Bigoni. Production Secretary, Ariana Dolini. Assistant Production Coordinator, Lisa Nava. Cast PAs, Antonio D'Amato, Andrea Colzani. Script Supervisor, Roberta Butti. Art Department Coordinator, Fabio Anetto. Set Designer Assistant, Isolino Maranzano. Set Designer Second Assistant, Benedetta Maestro. Art Buyer, Alessandra Alberello Conti. Set Designer Third Assistants, Nicole Miriam Ginevra Afaris, Christina Vittoria Marazzi. Swing Gang, Marzio Bardi. Swing Gang Assistant, Gabriel Forte. Property Master, Stefano Picciarelli. Assistant Property Master, Enrico Marchesin. Second Assistant Property Master, Michele Marchesin. A-Camera First Assistant, Nicolo Primo. A-Camera Second Assistant, Carlo Febrero. B-Camera Operator, Franco Rusty Rosignoli. B-Camera First Assistants, Paolo Gabi. Maurizio Iannello. Juri Molina Rolle, Antonello Baghetto, B Camera Second Assistants, David Bongiorni, Marco Angeloni, Stefano Mameli, Digital Loaders, Andrea Bralpito, Giacomo Ribusi, Additional Camera Operator, Milan, Giovanni Gabi. Songs. Ambra Mai Fe, Largo, written by George Friedrich Handel, arranged by Asi Bashiri. Amore Vole, Nicola Arigliano, Alibi, Handel Dixit Dominus Movement 2 Soprano Full, written by George Friedrich Handel. Cara Sposa, written by George Friedrich Handel, performed by Purcell, Handel, and Gluck. Dixit Dominus RV 594 the 8th, De Torrente in Via, written by Antonio Vivaldi, performed by Vienna State Opera Orchestra, Vienna Kammerchor, Angelo Africian conductor. Piano Sonata No. 10 in C major, K, 330, the 3rd. Allegretto, live, written by Mozart, performed by Vadim Haimovic. J'ai vu, written by Daniel Ruhr and Jacques Ruhr, performed by Daniel Ruhr. Breaking Story, written by David Malinieux. Your Daily News, written and performed by Rafal Gaskaminsky. Bowling for Scoop, written by Billy Ray Fingers, Bruce Fingers, Adam Michael Schiff, and Josie Schwada. Concerto in Fa Maggiore D67 Allegro Rese, written by Giuseppe Tartini, performed by Interpreti Veneziani. Concerto in La Minore Op. 3 in 8 Allegro, written by Antonio Vivaldi, performed by Interprete Veneziani. In memory of Norina Fiumano. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental. No identification with actual persons, places, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. Copyright Burnt Orange Heresy, LLC, 2019. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding from Sony Pictures Entertainment, read by Inger Tudor. For more information about Motion Picture Access, visit our website at access.wgbh.org. A royal blue background fills the screen with white words at its center, Sony Pictures Classics.